Hello, dear viewers, and welcome to a new episode of our program, Questions About Faith. It is our utmost pleasure to answer all the questions that you send to us. And it is also our honor to have with us Father Zechariah Butros to answer all the questions that you have. Welcome to you, Father.
Thank you, thank you.
We have been discussing the fact of Christ's crucifixion. Would you please give us a summary, especially for those who have not been watching, so they may be able to follow the subject, because you know how important the subject is to all of us.
This is indeed the mainstay of Christianity, its backbone, or its pivot. If you remove crucifixion from Christianity, it will be meaningless. This is the foundation. You're talking about the fact of Christ's crucifixion, but in terms of incarnation, that Christ is the Son of God. And why? Because he was God incarnated. And why? To fulfill our redemption. And we got to know how he accomplished redemption. Because God in the beginning created man in his image and his likeness, out of love, provided him with everything. Then sin entered through the devil's malice and deception, who was able to separate man from God by causing him to disobey him, to break his command. And now man has to face God's fair judgment. He is now condemned to death. The wages of sin is death. On the day you eat of this tree, you shall surely die. Now he is faced with a death sentence. We learned in the previous episode that God is merciful, so would he leave him to die?
Of course not.
So, in order not to let him die, because God is merciful and at the same time just as I spoke about the scales, justice is tantamount to mercy. So, in order to meet the requirements of justice and to show mercy to man, the wisdom of God had to come up with the principle of redemption, the principle of redemption. And about redemption, which is our issue here, I allow you to talk about it for as long as you want.
Well, Father, in order to get this across to our Muslim viewers, is there anything in the Bible, in the Quran, that proves the principle of redemption? Of course we know it from the Bible, but nonetheless, we still would like to show them that this is a biblical principle, and after that, we can prove it from the Quran.
Right.
Please start.
Well, as far as the Bible is concerned, as I told you, it is all focused about redemption. And that means, of course, I cannot cite all the verses.
Well, I know there are too many.
But we will be quoting from the epistle of the Apostle Paul, the second epistle to the Corinthians, chapter 5, verse 14. It says the following. If one died for all, then all died. If one.
This needs clarification.
If one here died for all, which means in their stead, then all died. Then the sentence was executed on them through a redeemer for all. This bit now has an equivalent in the Quran. They match almost identically. In Surah 5, Al-Ma'idah, verse 32, we read the following. We prescribe to the children of Israel that anyone who kills any person without another soul being involved, I will explain all that. Who kills any person without another soul being involved or for causing mischief in the land acts as if he had killed all mankind.
But
one moment, please. And anyone who brings it to life acts as if he has granted life to all mankind. You have a question?
Please repeat the reference in the explanation, Father.
Surah 5, Al-Ma'idah, verse 32. Now the explanation. We have prescribed to the children of Israel, and the children of Israel in particular, because the children of Israel crucified Christ. It says, we have prescribed to the children of Israel that anyone who kills any person without another soul. What does without another soul mean?
Without having killed a soul.
Right. That is an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a soul for a soul. You see? So, if he had killed a soul, he should be put to death on account of that soul. But whoever killed a soul which has not killed another soul, that is innocent, that is to kill an innocent person,
as though he killed all mankind.
As though he killed all mankind, right? And whoever brings this innocent soul back to life acts as if he had granted life to all mankind. So where is this innocent soul that died?
And who is he? Who can also grant life but Christ?
Isn't that right? The verse again. In order to be understood in the light of this explanation. Surah 5, Al-Ma'idah, verse 32. We prescribe to the children of Israel, in particular, precisely, that whoever kills a soul without another soul, that is, killed an innocent soul, or for causing mischief in the land, that is, hasn't corrupted in the land, a pure soul, that is, whoever kills an innocent pure soul, acts as if he had killed all mankind. Almost like a universal death sentence. Not what is more important and greater is, who brings it to life? Was there a soul that was killed and was brought back to life?
But Christ.
But Christ? Who brings it to life acts as if he had granted life to all mankind. This is the principle of redemption.
But our beloved Muslims do not understand it that way, Father. Although it is very clear.
Well, it is only natural that every commentator would explain from his viewpoint. You can't expect a Muslim commentator to say this means the redemption of Christ. For them, it wouldn't.
Of course it wouldn't happen.
Well, it is impossible. But they justify it. They explain it in a way. They find a way out and so forth. But here I am addressing the mentality of the 21st century. I am addressing the 21st century's mentality, educated people, civilized people, where intellect has its place because science has spread out, technology has spread out, and each one thinks for himself, therefore understands for himself. Let's not rely solely on the commentaries given to the Bedouins of old times in accordance with their mentality. We want modern-day commentaries. And each one can think what these things mean. Of course, if they go to ask any of the sheikhs, they will say, are you disbelieving? The devil is in the details. Just take it as it is. This is what we have been taught. But the words are very clear, that the principle of redemption is there. Just as it is in the Bible, it is in the Quran. The principle of redemption. And what does redemption really mean? Al-Imam al-Nasafi gave a magnificent explanation in the fourth volume, page 21. Al-Imam al-Nasafi, he said,
in his commentary,
yes, the commentary of Al-Imam al-Nasafi on the issue of the redemption of the son of Abraham. He says, redemption is saving, a saving from death by means of a substitute. The meaning of redemption is the saving from death by providing a substitute and a replacement. And therefore, it says in Surah 37, Al-Safat, from verse 101 to 107, we ransomed him by means of a great sacrifice, redemption. The principle of redemption is there in Surah 37, Al-Safat, we ransomed him by means of a great sacrifice, right? Again, there is something else. In the Bible, we find the redemption of the son of Abraham. We say it is Isaac.
Well, keep it...
Okay, keep it general.
The son of Abraham.
The son of Abraham, in order to avoid getting into side issues. For the son of Abraham, he provided a lamb, which is the main thing mentioned in Surah 37, Al-Safat. We ransomed him by means of a great sacrifice, where he took the ram and slaughtered it. We have something else. We have in the Bible... When the people of God were in the land of Egypt, in slavery, on the night when the people of God left Egypt, after the plague smeared on Pharaoh, with the tenth plague, which was the plague of the killing of the firstborn throughout the whole of Egypt, from the firstborn of the king to the firstborn of the cattle, except for the firstborn of the people of God.
Why?
Why? They were told that as the angel comes down to kill all the firstborns, you must put on your doorpost the mark of blood. Slaughter a sheep. Take its blood and sprinkle it on the threshold and the two doorposts. As the angel passes by the door and sees the mark of the blood, he would say, this one is safe. We have a sacrifice. Our firstborn has been slaughtered, but we slaughtered a sheep in his stead. Go visit the houses that have not slaughtered. That is the houses of the Egyptians, and slaughter and kill their children. So this was a sacrificial lamb. That's why it's called Passover. which comes from the word Pascha, which means passing over. That is to say, the angel would pass over and not kill. And why? Because instead of the firstborn, they sacrificed a ram. So here they redeem their firstborn by means of a ram. This is again the principle of redemption. In Islam, there is again the same principle.
Yes. I wanted to ask about that. You have said that the principle of redemption is mentioned in two places. Again, for confirmation.
Now, in Islam, just as the firstborn was redeemed by means of a ram, something happened to Abdullah, the father of Muhammad himself.
Yes, that's correct.
When Abdul Muttalib, his grandfather, the grandfather of Muhammad, that is, he vowed that if he was given 10 children for sons, he would dedicate one of them as a sacrifice. He cast a lot among his children, and the lot fell on Abdullah, the father of Muhammad. Muhammad, of course, had not been born yet. The people of Quraysh said, No, you can't slaughter him. Let us cast a lot. And they went to a soothsayer. They asked her, we want to cast a lot. So she cast a lot for them. She asked them, what is it that you use for ransom? They said, we ransom by 10 camels. She said, that's okay. They cast a lot again, and again it fell to Abdullah. The second, third time casting lots. Again, Abdullah. It went up from 20 to 30 until 100. So the lot fell to the camels. Are you following? So the people of Quraysh rejoiced that the gods accepted the ransom or redemption. And he redeemed the soul of Abdullah by means of 100 camels. So Abdullah was not killed, but it was the camels instead.
So then, the principle of redemption is there, and it is established in Islam.
Definitely. Here is a third confirmation for you. In the Old Testament, in the book of Leviticus, there was a law called the law of sacrifices. Anyone who commits a sin must offer a sacrifice, because anyone who sins was supposed to be put to death, for the wages of sin is death. So they resorted to redemption. God had stated the law of redemption to them by means of a sacrifice. And according to the gravity of their sins, each one offered a sacrifice, being turtle doves or young pigeons or a sheep. Someone would offer a goat or an ox, an animal sacrifice.
According to one's means.
Yes, within their means. This was considered redemption, and according to the sin. And this was considered redemption instead of the death of the person. They were ransomed by those sacrifices. And this principle is in Islam.
The pilgrimage.
Al-Nahr, the slaughtery, or the Adha feast.
Yes, that's what I meant.
So, you meant the feast of sacrifice. But one sacrifices in order to redeem oneself. And of course, in the Islamic books, there is a lot about that. And I'll tell you some magnificent ones. I had looked them up and read them. In the book entitled Islamic Religion in Iran, it says, the sacrifice feast is called in the land of the Persians a feast of offering or animal sacrifice. And you know what they call during their ablutions on that feast? You know what they call out? Oh God, make the sacrifice an atonement for my transgression and remove evil from me. You will find this in the book Deen al-Islam, page 367. Oh God, make the sacrifice an atonement for my transgression, that is redemption, and remove evil from me. And in the book Al-Faqh by Rabi'a, Muslim narrates about Anas, may God be pleased with him. He says, the Prophet, may God's peace and prayer be upon him, sacrificed two fine rams, fully horned. He slaughtered them with his honorable hand. You will find this in volume 1, page 711. The Prophet sacrificed two fine horned rams. That means they were mature. He slaughtered them with his honorable hand. And in Mishkat al-Masabih, page 42, it says that as the Prophet was slaughtering the rams, he said, O God, this is in my stead, and in the stead of whoever among my nation who has not sacrificed. That is, accept this as redemption for me and for those among my nation who have not sacrificed, who have not offered a ransom. In the book Ahya Ulum al-Din, volume 1, page 243.
By Imam al-Ghazali.
Yes, by al-Ghazali.
Just to make it clear, Yes.
Al-Bazar and Abul-Sheikh, narrated on the strings of Abi Sa'id, the messenger of God, may God's peace and prayer be upon him, said, O Fatima, that is his daughter, rise to your sacrifices and recite the testimonies, for by means of the first drop of their blood, God will forgive your past sins. So, a drop of blood forgives, because originally in the Bible it says, without shedding of blood there is no forgiveness.
No forgiveness, yes.
And hence the inevitability of redemption. Pure and innocent blood must be shed to redeem me. This was for a purpose. Again, the book Ahya Ulum al-Din, volume 1, page 243, says the following. As to the slaughtering of the offspring, al-hadi, that is the sacrifice. As to the slaughtering of the offering, it is a means of approaching God Most High. So you must perfect the offering and seek that God may liberate or free by means of each part of it, a part of you from the fire. That is, this will atone and redeem himself. This will be his ransom. And therefore, the larger the sacrifice, the more abundant its parts, the more extensive your redemption from the fire will be. So, we are in need of a huge redeemer. The larger, the better, right? Who is this huge redeemer who can redeem all mankind?
And here we come to this very important point.
What is it? What do you mean?
Who is capable of redeeming all humanity? And what are the attributes that make him able to do that?
Quite right. Now we come to
the crux of the matter, and also the bone of contention, the exact thing they object to.
Yes, this is the crux of the whole matter. This is the cause of the incarnation.
And all the divine provision.
And the crucifixion. All because of this point. Who, I wonder, is that Redeemer? What conditions should that Redeemer meet? Pay close attention, my dear viewers. We will go one bit at a time, because the topic requires a lot of deliberation. If you are not in a good mood now, record this episode in order to hear it later on. Give it time. Let's first deal with sin, in order to be able to see the ransom. Sin is measured in magnitude, and offense, whether it's big or small, by the person offended. If I offend an ordinary or a simple person, just an ordinary person. No, what I want to say is maybe a janitor or an office boy. If I offended such a person, it is still sin. It is an offense. How can I remedy it? Or how can I redeem it? I would go to him, and I know what to do. I'll get out a $50 bill or a $100 bill, and I'll tell him, keep it for your children or to pay for your tea. He would say, oh, mister, why all that? I would answer, well, I offended you. I swore at you. And the poor guy would say, oh, I wish you would swear at me every day, sir. Isn't that right? Suppose this curse or this offense, which I committed against my office boy, suppose I committed it against my boss.
Then the redemption must be bigger.
Can I still go to my boss and say, please take this $100 bill?
Of course not.
You cannot pay your way out of it. No way. It's now gotten bigger. Now suppose I committed the same offense against the president of the country. Now it is a totally different story.
You will vanish.
Yes, I will be no more. Well, I'm talking about any president now. I don't want this to be taken personally. I don't want anyone to say I'm cursing Abdel Nasser. Are you following? Now my sin has gotten bigger, and its magnitude became as big as the one I offended. The worthier he is, the larger my sin is. Okay. Now we come to the person who offends God. Any man, even the president of a country, is still limited. But God is unlimited. Therefore, any offense against him is also unlimited. Any number multiplied by infinity equals infinity, right? One times infinity equals infinity. So, my single sin against the infinite God equals infinity, right? So now my offense against the infinite God has become huge, unlimited. All right, what is the punishment of it?
Death.
My offense is already unlimited. This death must be eternal death, also unlimited.
As we said in the previous time.
Yes, in the previous episode. Now it has become an unlimited sin worthy of an unlimited punishment, eternal death. Okay, when we attempt to redeem it, what sort of redeemer do we use here?
Someone suitable.
Also unlimited. Is this right or wrong? Well, assume I took your car, Rolls Royce, and I ran it against a tree. Would I get you a Fiat and say, oh, please excuse me, I totaled your Rolls Royce. Would you please take this one in its stead? This won't do.
Nonsense.
You can't do that. A Rolls Royce car must be redeemed by Rolls Royce car, right? A sin against God requires unlimited redemption, commensurate with God. And that's impossible. To have any redeemer on earth among mortal men who is at the same time unlimited, which then required that the unlimited God would come to redeem us. He himself would redeem. Okay? So that was the first condition, that the redeemer must be unlimited. Because sin is unlimited, and its punishment is unlimited, and its redemption must also be unlimited. And the only unlimited person is God. And hence was the inevitability of incarnation. God himself had to come, right? Is there anything in Islam to confirm that it is God who atones, and that he is the one to atone? Certainly. Islam maintains that it is God who atones. Quranic verse. Listen. In Surah 65, Al-Talaq, anyone who heeds God will have his evil deeds atoned for.
That is, it's God himself who makes atonement.
I didn't make that up.
No, you didn't.
The words are there, but where are those who read and understand? Is that right? Surah 65, Al-Talaq, anyone who heeds God will have his evil deeds atoned for. So it is God who makes the atonement, because it is God who is the only unlimited person. And again, in Surah 5, Al-Ma'idah, I will atone for your evil deeds and show you into gardens, the gardens of pleasure. I will atone. So the first condition for redemption is that it would be...
Excuse me, there is something that requires a bit of clarification.
Oh, please ask.
Sometimes our beloved Muslims say God forgives. They don't believe in the atonement. They say that the atonement actually means forgiveness of sins, not the way we understand it. So we want to clarify the difference between the two, the forgiveness and the atonement.
Oh, of course the word yukafir, to atone, has a different root than takfir and hijra. Let's at the beginning separate this meaning from that meaning. Takfir and hijra tells a person you're an infidel.
No, we leave this alone. It's got nothing to do with us.
Kafar in the sense of calling somebody an infidel. No, takfir is related to the root word cover. Cover is to conceal.
Concealment.
In all languages, it means to cover. Takfir. Be it in Arabic, in Hebrew, it all means to cover, even in English, all of them. So, yukafir is to cover. There is a defect which he covers, to cure it. I told you the last time. So I spread my wing over you and cover your nakedness. So through atonement, there is covering, concealment. And covering involves redemption, self-sacrifice on behalf of the sinful person, right? Atoning for the person. So that's the meaning of atonement. As to forgiveness, it is to pardon when you have covered. You pardon. I cover your sin. Those who love you will forgive you any offense, but an enemy will only find fault with you. So the word cover, to conceal, to atone, and then to forgive you for the offense, you have committed because it has been covered. So someone would offend me, and then later I would say, it's okay, it's okay. I consider it not there anymore. We are all right now. And as if you haven't done anything because I pardon you. This way I covered his sin and forgave it. So God atones for our sins. Yet as he conceals them and he pardons us. To forgive us is to pardon. Isn't that right? But atonement is to cover, and it is a prerequisite.
This is exactly the point that we want to get across.
Okay, let me give you an illustration. Adam and Eve, both of them sinned in the garden. And after they had sinned, they became naked. They found themselves naked. So they started to sew tree leaves to cover themselves, to cover their nakedness. The sun would rise, the leaves would dry up, and their nakedness becomes visible. There is no use. Man's own works do not atone for him, do not cover him, do not conceal him. They do not cover his body. All right? And by the way, the other sense of yokafir, in the sense of making one an infidel, is yokafiruhu, but in our sense here is yokafir anhu. So, what did God do? The Bible says that he got them shirts of animal skin and clothed them. And those did not dry up from the sun. But where did he get the skin from?
A sacrifice.
A sacrifice. Then sacrifice is the redemption, and the righteousness of the sacrifice is taken on. The dress of the sacrifice is taken to cover man, to atone for his misdeeds. And hence, the belief that it is God who atones for our sins when he redeems us with a sacrifice. And about this sacrifice, we said the first prerequisite is that he should be unlimited. Unlimited because sin is also unlimited, and the punishment is unlimited, which requires unlimited redemption.
I think this way we made it very clear to our beloved ones everywhere that the principle of redemption is in the Quran and in Islam. It is also evident in the Muslim practices themselves, and the simplest illustration of that is the sheep that's been sacrificed on the Feast of Sacrifice.
You know, I want to say something before you conclude the program, because it is high time. The first prerequisite is unlimitedness. There is a second prerequisite, that he should be human. The third is that he should be pure. I mean, there are three prerequisites. In this episode, I only covered the first one, the unlimitedness.
We are grateful, Father, to have you with us. May God bless you and bless your ministry. My dear viewers everywhere, be sure that God is a loving Father. He wants to atone you for your sins. Dear viewers, we will meet again, God willing. Thank you. Till we meet again.